This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
1180 516 564 1180.
Jazz Vipers at WBAI, New York City.
All right, that's where we are at 99.5 FM, 84 degrees at 1 o'clock. You're tuned to WBAI 99.5 FM. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille.
It's 1 o'clock.
Everybody, this is Armand DeMille back with you with The Positive Mind. Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM, bringing you ideas, concepts, guests, books, ideas, fantasies. Still help you lead a more positive-minded life. And here we are, my friend. This is Armand DeMille, and I'm with you. You know, it was good to have that time off because I rested. And while I was resting, I got some good night's sleep. And when I was getting some good night's sleep, I realized, you know, sleep is not that easy to get for many people. So I went to one of my favorite books, and I started researching sleep. And I started checking sleep, and I asked my associate, Stephanie Dombra, to go dig up some information about sleep. She's one of my researchers. And so stuff was fascinating, wasn't it, Stephanie?
Absolutely.
I mean, we just have more than... So I went to one of my beginning people who stirred this all off, Dr. Pierce Howard, who was a guest of ours recently on here on the program. And Pierce is the author of The Owner's Manual for the Brain. Pierce Howard put together a terrific book on different things about the brain. And I saw his chapter on sleep together with the other research we did. I thought, what better than to get Pierce on? Pierce, are you with us?
Yes, sir.
And thank you once again for making room in your calendar. I know it was last-minute notice. But I want to get the audience an education about sleep, because I think it's one of the things that people ignore in mental health and in well-being. I mean, a lot of people think, you know, sleep, what's sleep? It's like breathing. You don't have to really consider it. But I see a correlation between mental health and people's attitudes and how they sleep. So I want to start it off. I want to start it off with a beginning. And I think there are two giant beginnings. What we know is sleep cycles is one beginning, and melatonin is another beginning. So if it's okay with you, I want to start off with melatonin, just because people know somewhat about it, and because my name is Armand de Melatonin. I just shortened it to Armand de Mel. So let's start with that, Pierce, if we can. I want to talk about melatonin because there's so much about it that's important to people. I mean, why do people drink milk at night, warm milk at night, to try to sleep? Melatonin. You know, and we're going to talk about that. So let's start there, and this is going to continue for quite a few days. I'm going to bring it to you. Tell me about melatonin.
Okay. To put it in some perspective, Armand, sleep, wake and sleep parallel day and night. And when the sun hides itself behind the horizon and things get dark, It encourages us to go to sleep. If we were cave people, cave dwellers, when it got dark, we would then go to sleep. And then when it got light, we would awake. And the reason is that when the sun rises in the morning, the very fact of the presence of the rays of the sun give a signal to the pineal gland to start or to stop producing melatonin. So when the sun comes out, it says, okay, pineal gland, stop producing melatonin. And then we slowly become awake and alert. And then when the sun goes down, the pineal gland says to itself, ah, I can get back to work now and start producing more melatonin because the sun's gone away. And when the melatonin starts being produced, one feels sleepy. So sleep and wake evolutionarily parallel day and night and the rising and the setting of the sun.
Okay, now of course, I'm sure many people are thinking, well, what about up in Greenland where you get, 2 hours of dark and 42 hours of, or whatever's left, 22 hours of light during the day, or, wherever it is, where you get a lot of night and very short days. Are they still following it? They don't sleep according to the sun.
No, and of course we don't sleep today according to the sun either, because we have modern light fixtures and other methods for staying awake, including
the... Okay, so it's not just sunlight, it's light.
It's sunlight in its natural form that has the strongest effect. If you're working in an interior room in a building at 9 o'clock in the morning and you feel sleepy, it could be because you don't have an exterior window and you're not getting natural sunlight. And you can boost your alertness by putting a light fixture in your work area that has full spectrum light in it. The kind of lamps that you use to grow plants indoors, that kind of thing, grow lights, they're called. In fact, there's a technical term for this called the CSI, the Color Spectrum Index. And the CSI, if you call your light distributor, they will tell you what the rating is. And if the rating is 90 or more, it's the equivalent of natural sunlight, and that's the kind of lamp you want to have if you don't have access to natural sunlight.
Okay, so what I understand you saying is we have kind of a sleep cycle, and the pineal gland has, as one of its neurotransmitters, or we have a neurotransmitter called melatonin, and melatonin is light sensitive, right? And its light sensitivity is that when there is an absence of light, the melatonin is secreted or produced, and the melatonin encourages our sleep. Is that accurate so far?
Yes, sir.
Okay, now once we have this melatonin, then what does turkey have to do with melatonin and tryptophan and all that? I mean, the thing about the warm milk gets me, because I know that melatonin is used somehow in the digestion of milk products.
Right.
Is that accurate?
Yeah. L-tryptophan is an amino acid that tends to be associated with both serotonin and melatonin. And melatonin is, in fact, a metabolite of serotonin. The brain produces serotonin before it produces melatonin. So that's why you sort of get relaxed and quiet before you get sleepy. One precedes the other. And interestingly enough, this is true for sighted as well as unsighted people. Research has demonstrated that even the blind are sensitive with respect to melatonin production and the rising of the sun.
Hmm.
So it's the presence of these natural sun rays, not necessarily coming through the eyes, but through the sensors in the skin.
And it could be, someone said to me, even in the back of the kneecap.
Yes, that's true.
In the back of the knee, you could sense. If you have light shining on that, it could be enough of a sensor.
That's true.
You know, a sliver coming through a window.
So there is some research, Armand, that indicates that abundance of light can almost have the same thing, the same effect as a full spectrum light. In other words, a really bright light, like a stage light, could have a similar effect to a full spectrum light. I've seen research that suggests that. But basically what's happening in a place like Iceland is that, you know, people adapt to their environment. And even then, if you're in a dark area, whether it's indoors or outdoors and the sun is down, you're going to adapt and have lights of some time to try to keep you awake. I've never seen any research that indicates that in its natural form, without lights or candles or anything else, that someone in an area where there's 20 hours of darkness and 4 hours of light, I've not seen any research that indicates that that they would sleep proportionately longer than those of us closer to the equator.
The idea of today's program, my guest is Pierce Howard. The idea of today's program is I would love a lot of you out there who I know to get a better night's sleep. I mean, by better night's sleep, I think a solid, beautiful 7 hour, I think seven is good, or some number of hours solid sleep is so rejuvenating, so it's so good for your health that without it, I see people suffer, and I see people suffer more than they know than we could attribute to sleep. Now, I also noticed, Pierce, that some people sleep at the beach. You know, if they get in, they get under the beach. So I'm sure that there, the effect of the sun rays sometimes will overpower and just produce other things that make you feel so groggy that you just go to sleep. You know, seeing somebody under an umbrella, you know, sleeping because the breeze is blowing on them and they're in perfect heaven is common.
That's certainly true. And some of them are in fact sleeping, and some may be in fact just doing something akin to meditating. We can talk more about that in a minute.
What are the advantages and the benefits of sleep and the non-benefits of no sleep?
Well, let's first talk about what sleep is.
Good.
Sleep is not a matter of hours. It's a matter of complete cycles. It's a mistaken notion that it matters how many hours you get. What matters is how many complete cycles you get. We sleep on an average of a 90-minute cycle. During that 90 minutes, you go through five different types of brain waves, starting out with the beta wave of normal alertness, which is where you and I are right now, and then you go to alpha state and delta and gamma, and you get into deep sleep, and then you get into REM sleep, and then there's a brief period of alpha wave sleep, and then you're awake after the cycle. After that 90-minute cycle, you tend to be, you are in fact awake for a brief period of time before you enter your next cycle. And in fact, if you were to hook up yourself to an electroencephalograph, you could actually see where the cycles begin and end, and then you can notice anywhere from 15 seconds to a minute or two of awakeness. It's just that the younger we are, as much melatonin as we're producing, we tend not to be aware that we were awake 15 seconds last night between cycles, or 30 seconds, or a minute. We tend to just go into the next cycle.
Wait a minute. Hold on. This is, I think, such a beautiful image. We sleep in cycles. The cycles are about 90 minutes, is what you're saying. Is that accurate so far?
Yes. Now, there are individual differences. Some individuals will have a longer cycle. Some will have a shorter.
And when we say cycle, we mean stages of sleep, and we're going to talk about REM sleep and stuff like that, right?
Right.
We're going to get to that. But in this cycle of 90 minutes, we have sequences of 90-minute or 90 thereabouts minutes. And when you're, there's a little gap in between each one. Do people wake up in between each one?
Yes, you're awake between each cycle. You may not be aware that you're awake, but if your bladder's full, or if it's cold, or if it's hot, or if the, if there's a light outside the window, or if there's traffic in the streets of New York or wherever, if there's some sensory perception that makes you aware that you're awake, you're more likely to be aware that you're awake.
So you could feel it. So, I mean, I know people who say they wake up every couple of hours. Maybe they're waking up every in between each sleep cycle.
Well, what they're doing when they wake up is they've been waking up all of their life. They just weren't aware of it. And as we get older, we start producing somewhat less melatonin, and we sleep a little bit lighter, which means that between the cycles, we're more likely to be aware of being awake.
And
but we've always been being awake between cycles. We're just not aware of it. So what I've tried to tell my friends who are aging and waking up at night, I say, hey, don't worry about it. If you worry about it, yeah, you're probably not going to be able to go back to sleep. But if you just laugh it off and say, yeah, I'm getting a little bit older, and I'm not making quite as much melatonin, but it's normal to be awake between cycles, and I just need to go back to sleep.
How fascinating. You know, I'm also thinking about sex, thinking about couples, young couples who go to sleep, and somewhere in the middle of the night they may have sex, and they could be catching it right, if they're lucky, they're catching it right at the end of their cycle. They're somehow coordinating those sleep cycles. You know, have sex, go to sleep, have sex, go to sleep, wake up. Have you heard about, there was a report on BBC last night about sleep sex, about people who wake up in the middle of the night and go out and have sex. They can actually go out of their house and have sex with a stranger and barely remember it and then come home, not remember it at all. Big report on it. It's been reported as a distinct neurological disorder.
That's an interesting one. What a way to live, huh?
Well, yeah, it's kind of interesting. You find yourself having had sex and not understanding at all. It's not sleepwalking. It's something other than that.
Well, we know. I'm not as familiar with that as I am with sleep eating. And in fact, we can talk about Ambien a little bit later. But one of the side effects of taking Ambien is an increase in the incidence of sleep eating, which is sort of a combination of sleepwalking and frenzied eating.
Yeah, I call it foraging.
Foraging, you
know, it's
yes.
A real feeling of foraging.
Yeah.
You get up out of bed, and then suddenly your refrigerator becomes the forest, and you're looking for something to eat, and you barely know it. You're not aware of it. Ambien is known for that.
Yeah. Now let's get back to this to the cycle business for a minute.
Sure.
I think it's important for the individual to know what their average cycle is, and we'll learn why in just a second. The way you find out the average length of your cycle is to start keeping a sleep log. And the ideal time to do this is on vacation. You need to be able to keep a sleep log over a period of time when you're not using an alarm clock. Because what you want to do is to write down the estimated beginning and end of every sleep episode. So if you think you went to sleep last night at 11 o'clock and then you woke up at 2 to go to the bathroom and then you got back to sleep at 2:15 approximately and then you slept straight through to 8:15 and then you woke up naturally, that would be one sleep episode of 3 hours and another one of 6 hours.
How could you write down after you fall asleep? You mean, well, you have to write it down looking backwards because...
Yeah, looking backwards. So you just make a note of when it is you start trying to go to sleep. So if you cut the lights off at 11 o'clock, the typical person is going to go to sleep within 2 to 5 minutes of trying to go to sleep.
Most people I know who are older, they say they wake up and they go right back to sleep. So wouldn't it be just wise to wake up, see what time it is on the clock, write it down?
Yes.
And then go back to sleep, and if you wake up again, write it down. Now, there must be a lot of factors affecting that waking up besides the cycles. The cycles, that's terrific information. But if it's a 90-minute cycle, how is it when people go back to... Well, they could go back to sleep and they could wake up, but then they won't notice that they woke up, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Some people wake up and go to the bathroom. Some people wake up, well, if you eat late at night and you're digesting a lot of food, are you likely to wake up more? If you drink alcohol?
Yes, if you have excess food late at night and if you have alcohol without rehydrating with water, it will eliminate much of your REM sleep, and you will not get as restorative a night's sleep. What I recommend to people that have alcohol in the evening is that they have one glass of water for every ounce of alcohol.
So scotch and water is very important.
Well, for the ounce of scotch, you need to have a glass of water. For the glass of wine, you need a glass of water. And the idea is that the alcohol is dehydrating, and it really will interfere with REM sleep. Instead of having the normal 20 to 27 minutes of REM sleep, it could cut it down by as much as half or two-thirds, and as a result, you are not going to be as refreshed the next day. And if you will rehydrate yourself with water before you go to sleep, it will help with that, and you will feel more refreshed the next morning. Now, the problem is you're going to have to wake up during the night and go to the bathroom a couple of times, but you wake up anyway.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So you might as well wake up and go to the bathroom a couple of times, and that's a small price to pay for feeling better the next morning.
Psychological, the things that happen to people who don't get the proper sleep, and we'll stay with the cycles. We're going to get right back to it, but I want to keep my audience around. If you're somebody who is slightly nervous about life and you get less sleep, are you more likely to be more nervous about life without the sleep? If you're somebody who is depressed, are you more likely to be more depressed because you don't sleep? What do you think, Pierce?
Absolutely. Yeah, to the extent that you are a worrier, you will tend to amplify sleep issues. And it will be that much harder to get back to sleep in the middle of the night. So there are things that you can do to try to overcome that. One is just by having the information that it is normal to wake up in the night, that you've been waking up all of your life. It's just that as you get older, you're more aware of it. And so if you can cognitively tell yourself, it's normal to wake up in the night, there's nothing wrong with me, I'm just more aware of it than I used to be, then it's going to cause less worry. Another thing that you can do is to increase the amount of melatonin that's in your body, and there are two ways to do that. One is by eating dairy products a couple of hours before you go to bed. Ice cream, yogurt, milk, cheese, all work fine, and they will metabolize into melatonin. It takes a couple of hours for it to process. Now, the old tale of having warm milk before you go to bed is a wise one in the sense that if the milk is warm, it will metabolize more quickly, and you'll feel the results more quickly. Another thing that you can do to increase the amount of melatonin is, as bedtime approaches, is to use dimmer lights. Don't use a bright light to read before you go to sleep. Use the dimmest light possible. Prefer the dimmer rather than the brighter, and it will have some effect on the level of melatonin.
A lot of people who say they can't sleep say they stay up all night watching television. I'll bet there's some kind of a reciprocal thing going on there. You can't sleep and you have the light of the TV in your eyes, especially with TVs nowadays having such sharp resolution. So they can't sleep and they watch TV and the TV's brightly shining on their face, and that makes them decrease their melatonin anyway, I think. What do you think?
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. And there, in terms of training, for people that have some problems with their sleep, there are two pieces of advice that seem to work as well as taking medication. One is to learn relaxation techniques. There are a lot of people who go to bed and they're not relaxed. They're tense. They're worried about tomorrow. They've got things on their minds. And so to try a meditation technique or some other form of relaxation exercise can have a dramatic effect on not only being able to get to sleep, but to get a good night's sleep. Also, something that's extremely important is for people that have problems with quality of sleep is to try going to bed at the same time every night, to make it almost a ritual that, well, 10 o'clock is my bedtime, or 11 o'clock is my bedtime, or 12 o'clock, but make it regular. And that's one of the first things that when I talk to people that or say they have trouble with their sleep, it's often people who have irregular times of going to sleep. And what their body is craving is regularity. Now, people are built differently. Not everybody needs that regularity. I happen to be the kind of person, I mean, I can go to sleep tonight at 10:30, and tomorrow night I can go to bed at 1 o'clock, and I'm fine. So some people need more regularity than others, and if they're not getting the regularity, it can interfere with the quality of sleep.
And if you're knocked off your cycle and you're sleep deprived, you know, by then you want to do anything possible. Like, I think there's even a switch on TVs. On televisions, there are switches that help you dim the brightness of your screen. It's really there. It's in every television. And when you go to setup, you could find it, dim brightness.
Yeah, now here's another piece of advice with respect to people that are having trouble going back to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Don't watch television in bed. Don't read in bed. If you're having trouble getting to sleep, get out of bed. And if you want to do something while you're out of bed and awake, go do it in a regular chair. Get out of the bedroom. You know, sometimes, for example, if I've had caffeine too late in the day, and there's another subject that we can get to, but sometime when I've had caffeine too late in the day, maybe I had a rich piece of chocolate pie after dinner at somebody's house, and there was a lot of caffeine in it, and it's keeping me awake. The best thing that I can do is to get out of bed, go downstairs, and get a book. And the more difficult the book, the better. If you get an exciting novel, it's liable to keep you more awake.
I think your book is great for that. Not because it's difficult, but because each chapter completes itself. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So that's what I like about The Owner's Manual for the Brain by Pierce Howard. You can get a little chapter of it, and you could read it. And this has become nighttime reading for me. I mean, I've got it sitting around, and what am I going to do? I'm awake. I'll go read another chapter.
Sure.
And that's kind of fun.
So what I do is I'll go read some nonfiction and get an ounce of cheese out of the fridge and nibble on the cheese and read some nonfiction. And typically within 45 minutes to an hour, my eyes are drooping, and I'll go back to bed and I'll go right to sleep.
Chocolate pie in North Carolina? Are you you in North Carolina?
Yes, sir.
Chocolate pie before sleep, huh? Hmm. A glass of milk would also be a great antidote. We're talking with Pierce Howard. So, Pierce, benefits, what happens to folks, once again, just, you know, people who are sleep-deprived, their brains get a little shattered. And it's hard to describe to people that you're spending a lot of money or you're taking Prozac sometimes and you're taking your other drugs when really what you've got to do is start at the beginning. You start with your health. Everybody is very concerned with their health and working out and exercise, but they're not aware of how important this sleep cycle is. Darken the room. Get that room dark if you can. Those little shards of light that are coming through very often will wake you. I think that's very important. Smells. Let's talk about the smells in a room while you're asleep. I knew a man who was awakened by his mate putting on some body lotion.
Oh, yeah.
When she woke up. Tell me about it.
Most odors interfere with sleep. As a general rule, you don't want odors in your sleeping room. It's a general rule. Don't put on perfume. If you've got to put on strong smelling medications and things like that, try to do it earlier in the evening so that the odor is not as fresh and as strong when you're trying to go to sleep. Because as a general rule, odors get your attention and they make you alert. There are a couple of odors that have been proven to be sleep-inducing. Cinnamon and sort of cinnamon and apple musk are, for example, good flavors. One of my favorite inns up in the North Carolina mountains has fresh apples in a bowl in every bedroom, which is a nice touch. Hmm. In fact, it's a nice fragrance to have as you're trying to sleep. I don't know whether they were doing that based on research or not, but it works. Another one is lavender. Studies recently have shown that inhaling lavender improves sleep. Specifically, it improves deep sleep and slow wave sleep. And people who have the essence of lavender in their home and in their bedroom tend to perceive after waking that they had a better night's sleep than other people do. What I reckon, and in fact, my mother did this in her home in eastern North Carolina. She would take a little piece of paper and put a drop of oil of lavender on that paper and stick it in the drawer of the chest of drawers in each bedroom. And so each bedroom has this light fragrance of lavender. And that's a fragrance that I grew up with. Huh. And I don't know whether she knew that science supported the fragrance of lavender as a sleep aid, but by golly, current research really does support it. You might try taking a little piece of paper and putting a drop of oil of lavender on the paper and sticking that piece of paper inside your pillowcase even.
I know there are pillows made with lavender oil. Listen, we're going to take a short break and stay with us, Pierce Howard. We're going to talk more about sleep. This is Armand DeMille. I'm playing a little music for you today because I've very specifically chosen a piece. I chose a piece that's made in Lebanon. I want you to think of people in Lebanon, and I want you to think of people in Lebanon who play music and dance and live and carry on a normal life. I want you to think of them as humans. From Lebanon, my friends. Lebanese music. Mazulat al-Wurud by Inad Saya, S-A-Y-Y-A-H, Lebanon, where people play music and people dance and people have children. And anyway, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I was sent some photographs recently, sent to me from Amsterdam, about what's happening there in Lebanon and what's happening to the towns and villages and people. You know, photographs that are not distributed around here in America. And it just ripped my heart open. You know, we have to say as much as we can to stop this kind of violence, however we can, just to let people have their own peace. However we could do it, whatever part we play in it, any voice that we have, to me, it's vitally important. We're here on The Positive Mind with WBAI 99.5 FM, and we're speaking with Dr. Pierce Howard. We're talking today about sleep and the benefits of sleep and the purpose of sleep. It's more important than you think. Why do some people sleep and other people don't? And what do you need? And what is it about sleep cycles? And he was talking about when you're younger, you have a sleep cycle that is a little more, it kind of works more efficiently in effect because the time in between may be shorter and you don't notice it. Is that true? Or is it that you just don't notice that you've woken up?
The levels of melatonin are higher when you're younger. The body produces less as you age.
So we both have cycles, except when you're a kid, it's a Harley, and when you get older, it's a Honda cycle. it's a little slower cycle.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the music doesn't stop playing between cycles when you're younger, and it stops playing when you're older, and the music being melatonin. And the melatonin carries you through, sort of, from cycle to cycle.
Now, is there such a thing as too much sleep? I know people who say, if I don't get waken up after 8 hours, I'm likely to sleep for 12, no matter what the light.
It certainly is possible. And when a person gets too much sleep on a consistent basis, the probability is that the person has either some kind of disorder that needs to be looked at. It could be associated with a mild form of depression or something else that is causing the excess sleep. But the actual amount of sleep that the individual requires can be determined by, for example, when you're on vacation and not using the alarm clock, take a look at how long, how many cycles you sleep. There was an experiment done, Armand, with a group of college students in which half of the students were allowed to sleep as many hours as they wanted, 8, 9, 10, 11, and the other half of the students were interrupted before each cycle was finished. So after about 80 minutes, they would be awoken by the researcher, or after 85 minutes, but they were hooked up to encephalographs. And just before the end of the cycle, they would be awoken by the researcher or the researcher's assistant. Now, both groups were allowed to sleep as much as they wanted, but the experimental group kept being interfered. Their sleep was interfered with, and they were awakened just before the cycle. Each cycle was over. What they found is that the students whose sleep was interfered with, it didn't matter whether they slept a total of 9 hours, 10 hours, 11 hours, 12 hours. They were absolutely exhausted, regardless of the number of total hours, because what was happening is they were not getting complete cycles. So in sleep, what we know is that a completed cycle is better for you than X number of hours. Now, there's a practical way that works out. It helps you learn how to set your alarm clock. So let's say, for example, that you know that you, from your sleep study and your sleep journals, you know that you've got an average 90-minute cycle. So if you go to bed at 11 o'clock and you know that you have to be out of the bed and in the shower by, let's say, 6:15 in order to get to a 7 or 7:30 breakfast meeting or whatever. Okay, so you go to bed at 11, and you've got to set the clock no later than 6:15. What's going to happen? If you've got a 90-minute cycle, that's going to be 7 hours and 15 minutes, right? 11 to 6:15.
Yeah.
What's going to happen is that alarm clock is going to go off right in the middle of deep sleep, and you're going to feel like a truck hit you, and you're not going to be back to normal for 3 or 4 hours. You would be more rested and get the same benefit sleep-wise if you'd read for an hour and turn the lights off at midnight and let the alarm go off at 6:15.
Now, wait, how do you figure this out again? If you figure an hour and a half, are you going on the 90-minute cycle?
Yes.
Going on a 90-minute cycle, if you go to sleep, let's say you go to sleep at 10 o'clock and you wake up at 6 o'clock. You can say to yourself, 11:30, I'm going to wake up. 1 o'clock, I'm going to wake up, right, because you're counting 90 minutes. And you try to set your alarm for within a 90-minute cycle? Is that what you're saying?
You want to set the alarm so that it goes off somewhere during the first 20 to 30 minutes of a cycle. If it's much later than that, it's going to be during deep sleep or REM sleep.
Can we really make this plan? I mean,
absolutely. I do it all the time.
You're saying if I go to sleep at 10 o'clock and I fall asleep at 10, I can say 11:30, 1 o'clock, 2:30, 4 o'clock, 5:30 is the time. If I'm going to get up between around 6 o'clock, I should get up between 5:30 and 5:45. And I should set my alarm based on that. Is that
absolutely.
And the same for older people and younger people?
Absolutely.
Because the cycle,
now, but again,
fantastic.
We need to keep following our sleep cycles. As we age, the cycles tend to become a little bit shorter. Also, this is going to complicate it a little bit. Earlier in the sleep episode, like when you go to bed at 10 o'clock, the first cycle tends to be longer than average.
Sure,
and the last cycle before you wake up in the morning tends to be shorter than average. So, again, we're talking about averages. So that complicates it a little bit, but the same principle is true. The average person does a 90-minute cycle, average of 90 minutes, and needs about 5 of those cycles. That translates to about 7.5 hours.
And
but
so
there's some people that have 2-hour cycles. There's some people that have average of 1-hour cycles.
And you can tell by if you're keeping track of when you wake up every night. If you have that, if you have a pen near your alarm, near your clock, and you see yourself wake up, you know, make a note of the time. See when those schedules are. See if there is a way of mapping your own.
You keep track of the beginning and ending time of each sleep episode, and then you find the lowest common denominator. So it helps if you got a little mathematician in the family.
You know, it's really brilliant that we invented a snooze alarm. Probably an alarm, we keep a snooze alarm because we're waking in the middle of a cycle, and we hit a button that says, let me sleep 10 more minutes, and somehow, without even knowing it, people develop clocks that allow you 10 more minutes because figure you could get through your cycle.
But no, that's not going to work, Aman.
It's not going to work.
In fact, the snooze alarm is deceptive. It gives you the idea that you're getting more sleep. But you're not. It may feel good. It may feel good to doze back off, but it's not going to make you feel any more refreshed. It's an illusion. When that alarm goes off and awakens you in the middle of a cycle, it's done the dirty deed. So you're better off trying to set that alarm to go off during the first 30 minutes of a cycle and not during the last hour of a cycle.
You know, there are people I know who fall asleep to television, and then somewhere in the middle of their sleep, some kind of violent thing takes place on television, and, you know, they have some violent movie or something, and you're woken to that.
Yeah, that's just a bad habit, a bad habit. And if people are having trouble with sleep, again, as we said earlier in the hour, I recommend that they don't watch television in bed. Watch it sitting up, and when they go to bed, bed is about sleep.
Get somewhere else. There are certain things about, you know, it was fascinating, about different physical conditions that are different at different times of the day, like rheumatoid arthritis. And this has to do with the circadian rhythms of people's bodies. People have clocks. And is it true that certain things like asthma have a different, feel different at certain times of the day, and arthritis at different times of the day?
Yes, there are time-specific associations with taking medications, with symptoms, with exposure to heart attack. There's a whole variety of medical associations with time of day, and you're better off talking with an MD about that. But there's one little factoid that I think your readers would find very interesting. And since you're talking about circadian rhythm, there is a time in the afternoon. This is for people who work during the day and sleep at night. There's a time in the afternoon when there's a dip in body temperature. It tends to occur about halfway between the time you wake up and the time you go to sleep. So if you wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning and you go to bed at midnight, it's going to happen right around 3 o'clock. Are you with me?
Yeah, I'm with you.
All right. Now, so right around 3 o'clock, and for most people, it happens somewhere between 2 and 4 o'clock. There's going to be a dip in body temperature. And when that happens, you're going to feel drowsy. It doesn't matter what you ate for lunch or didn't eat for lunch. You're going to feel drowsy. You may say to yourself, when you feel drowsy at 2:30, you may say, oh, I shouldn't have had that so-and-so for lunch. No, that doesn't matter. You're going to feel drowsy anyway. That's the time to take a nap. I take a nap 7 days a week, every single day. And I try to time it for that moment that I start feeling drowsy between 2 and 4 o'clock.
I always guessed it around 4:30 because I had kind of heard that with someone who was talking about I forgot what they were talking about, but it's so somewhere around between 2 and 4 o'clock, there's a drowsy feeling because the body temperature drops, and you capitalize on that, or what you do is take a nap at that point if you can.
Right. Now, what I define as a nap, Armand, is not what is generally thought of as a nap. I don't go to sleep, and I don't recommend that people go to sleep. What I recommend that you do is to shut down all your systems. I do it by just lying down on the floor. And your goal is to go from beta state, which is normal arousal, to alpha state, which is in between normal arousal and regular sleep. In alpha state, you're completely relaxed. Your muscles are relaxed. You're breathing slowly. There's a visible change in brain waves. They're slower and a little bit deeper. And you have these little dreams that you can control. The difference in the dreams during alpha state and during REM sleep is that these dreams during alpha state are dreams that you can manipulate. You can make them sing and dance and all that kind of thing. And when these images start popping into your mind, you know you're in alpha state. And when I take my nap, and I'll take one in about an hour this afternoon, when I take my little nap this afternoon, when I get into alpha state and I start seeing these little images in my mind, my eyes will just pop wide open as though they're saying to my body, thank you, Pierce, I needed that. And it's just the act of shutting down and giving in to this drowsiness, this dip in temperature, this lack of alertness. It's submitting to it, paying homage to it, and the body thanks you for it, and all of, before you know it, you're back in full alertness. Now, interestingly enough, the time of day when there are the largest number of industrial, highway, and domestic accidents is when? Between 2
right
and
there,
4 o'clock.
Sure. Of course, people get drowsy.
Because they get drowsy, and they try to struggle through it, fight
through
it. And they
go get their cup of coffee, and they try to wake themselves up because they're feeling a little sleepy.
Exactly.
But how could you do that if you're working, you know, if you're at a job? How can people get naps at jobs?
Well, it's interesting that you say that. New York has been one of the leaders in making naps available. There's a company in New York called MetroNaps, and they actually have napping centers where you can go take a 20-minute nap in a specially designed relaxation pod for a fee of $14. So If you can get away from the job and go to a Metronap center, you can do it that way. Also, Metronaps sells these pods to employers where individual workers can go get in these pods and get into that relaxation mode and then hop back to work. One of the problems, Armand, is that there are many employers who outlaw naps. There are many municipal governments, for example, that will fire workers if they take a nap. Well, they're just being ignorant of the research, because the research indicates that people who nap have fewer medical problems, fewer sick days, better mood, more productivity, fewer errors. I mean, it is a good thing, and it's got good research behind it.
Do you think a nap is helped by a sleep mask, or do you think it's better the other way? You know,
No, I don't think you need a sleep mask, because you're not trying to go to sleep. What you're trying to do is to simply relax. There was a picture in a magazine once of Bill Clinton taking a nap standing against a column outside the White House.
Mm.
I mean, I could take a nap by putting my head down on my desk. I could do it sitting in a chair. My favorite way to take a nap is just to lie down, close the door and lie down on the floor. I have been visiting in other cities, and I'll be in a building, and I'll just go find an empty room, close the door, and lie down on the floor for 10 minutes, and I'm refreshed.
For people in New York who don't know about this, you can rent a safety deposit box at a bank for the cost of $120 a year. And for that cost, you're entitled to go into a room for a half hour and stay in that room by yourself, and nobody disturbs you. So it's if you can't find yourself a metro nap, find yourself a safety deposit box room. It's absolutely nobody bothers you, because they figure you're sitting there with your treasures.
I have a granddaughter in New York City, young Stella Murphy, and when we're up there, we'll take her to a park or whatnot, and I can take a nap sitting in a public park in New York City.
Yeah, you're making quite a case for it. The everybody's a little different, but you're saying it is better. Now, also, isn't there something about how in the body rhythms, if there are certain things that happen 6 to midnight, you have high, your hormone levels drop in general, your blood pressure drops, your pulse rate drops, and then the lowest body temperature is between 2 and 3 a.m., right? And you're saying you also drop your body temperature in the afternoon.
There are two parallel ones. There's one between 2 and 4 in the morning and one between 2 and 4 in the afternoon.
And both the one between 2 and 4 helps you stay asleep, I guess.
The one between 2 and 4 in the morning is much more dramatic a dip. It's substantially more of a decrease in body temperature than the one in the afternoon.
That's probably when you get up and grab the blanket, when you suddenly feel like, oh, I must be cold.
Yeah,
and that's in the middle of your cycle.
Rule, you're much better off if there's something you need to do before leaving the house at 6 o'clock in the morning, or leaving the apartment at 6 o'clock in the morning. If there's something that you need to do beforehand, general rule, rather than setting the alarm clock earlier, you're better off staying up later.
Can we do a fast, like, two-minute review of the sleep cycles, phase one, phase two, you know, beta? What's the difference between alpha waves, theta waves, delta waves, and could you do that quickly?
Yeah, basically what happens is the waves get slower and deeper. You become still as a person. Your system slows down, and that's the restorative power of sleep. In fact, some recent research has shown that during the deep sleep periods, that the brain actually disconnects from other parts of the body. The brain disconnects during this kind of deep sleep, and you tend to be impervious to things like noise and light when you're in deep sleep because of this disconnect. REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep, that's when we dream, and it usually lasts up to around 27 minutes unless you've been having alcohol the night before, and in that case it shortens the REM sleep. But REM sleep is a mystery. There are all kinds of theories as to what its value is. But everybody has it. You have it during each cycle, and some people say that they don't dream. Well, they do. The studies show that everybody dreams during each cycle, during the REM part of the cycle. It's just that they may not remember it. And it's just they don't remember it, they didn't do it. But that doesn't mean it didn't happen. What is the purpose of REM sleep? What is the purpose of sleep? We know it's restorative. We know it helps memories become established. We know that there are chemical, hormonal, neurotransmitter balances that become adjusted during sleep. And if you don't get the sleep that you need, if you're sleep deprived, it will demonstrate itself through poor mood, through illness over time, through increased stress, through error rates, and that sort of thing. There are many people who pride themselves on not needing much sleep, and that's kind of a tough guy thing that, you know, I only need 4 hours a night. Well, that's very suspicious. Thomas Edison prided himself on not needing much sleep, but the truth of the matter is that Edison took cat naps throughout the day. He had an easy chair that he would sit down in and take cat naps multiple times throughout the day as a way of compensating for not getting a quote, normal night's sleep.
Pierce, we could go on for hours. I want to thank you very much, Pierce Howard. Dr. Pierce Howard, the owner's manual for the brain. Thanks for being with us again. We'll have you back again shortly. We got so much to do.
My pleasure.
Right, and this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. More music from Lebanon. If you want to get a copy of today's program, you could actually go to the website and listen to it or download it. ThePositiveMind.com. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. Bye-bye for now.
On Wednesday, July 26th at 7 p.m., join Robert W. Fuller, author of All Rise, Somebodies, Nobodies, and the Politics of Dignity, for an in-depth discussion of the Dignitarian Movement. Fuller will speak of a world without discrimination based on rank. It takes place at the New York Society for Ethical Culture at 2 West 64th Street near Central Park West in Manhattan. For more information, call 212-874-5210 or go online at www.nysec.org.
Got questions?
And you are tuned to listener-supported, commercial-free, community radio WBAI, WBAI.org, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. Coming up at 3 p.m. this afternoon, we'll be Talk Back with Hugh Hamilton, Taking Aim, with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen at 5 p.m. and the WBAI Evening News at 6 o'clock. It's 1:58 in New York City. Coming up next at 2, the Arts Magazine. Please stay tuned.
Capitalism has created a new geography of economics, power, and resistance movements. From Thursday, August 3rd to Sunday, August 6th, 9:30 a.m. to 6:30 p.m., come to the Brecht Forum for Class Struggle in the City. Through lectures, readings, and lively discussions, this course looks at capitalism through the lens of urban space, from the need for global cities to...
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.